We are committed to a two-state solution. But frankly, it hasn't been going that well. Not a lot of progress has been made. And you don't keep doing the same thing and expect different results.
The Holy City of Jerusalem seems a world away from here. 14,000 kilometres to be exact. But for weeks now in Canberra, politicians have been drawn into the contentious and decades-long dispute about the true central power in the Middle East.
A policy that is well over 40 years old should remain exactly the same as it is.
It is the capital of Israel, and that's where our embassy logically should be.
Maintaining peace with our Muslim-dominated neighbouring countries and our long-time allies in the United States has always been delicate. But there's been nothing delicate about the reaction to a recent announcement by Prime Minister Scott Morrison that he would consider moving the Australian embassy in Israel from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem.
Adding to the cost for terrorism.
Frankly, he made himself look stupid and made our country look stupid.
Australia will make its own decisions in its own national interest.
If the embassy move went ahead, Australia would be joining Guatemala as the only countries so far to replicate US President Donald Trump's controversial embassy move.
That it is time to officially recognize Jerusalem as the capital of Israel.
So will it happen? Why now? What is going on with the embassy? From the Sydney Morning Herald and The Age, this is Please Explain, a weekly podcast where you and I get the full story on some of the most significant issues facing Australia and a look inside the newsrooms that bring them to you. I'm Tori Maguire. Joining me this week is the Herald and the Age's chief political correspondent and Please Explain regular David Crowe. Welcome, David.
Hi, Tori.
And another familiar voice, senior writer and former foreign correspondent Nick O'Malley. Nick?
Hi, how are you?
Well, thank you. Nick, I just want to jump back in time a little bit for some context. What is the two-state solution?
So after the creation of Israel after World War II, hundreds of thousands, if not millions, of Palestinians were displaced. And this intractable dispute, which continues today, began. Or in fact, continued if we want to go back further. But in about 1974, I think the United Nations passed a resolution on how this dispute should in the end be settled, and it would be the two-state solution. So there would be Israel sitting alongside the state of a state of Palestine to be created along the West Bank between mainly between where Jerusalem lies, I suppose, and the Jordan River, with a section further down, which is now known as the Gaza Strip. And so ever since then, whenever peace negotiations have gone on, it has been working towards this two-state solution, how it would be created, what the boundaries would be, what power and external affairs authorities that this Palestinian state might have. And at the moment, it is still the avowed policy of the Palestinian Authority, of Israel, of the UN, of most of the world's nations to create these two states, to live alongside one another peacefully. The problem is, or one of the problems, one of many problems, is that both states want to see an undivided Jerusalem as their capital. And so historically, the UN and the nations of the world have said, okay, we'll put that problem aside for now. We will consider at present Jerusalem to be an international city. And this is why there is such resistance from Palestinians and their supporters to people recognizing Jerusalem as an Israeli capital. And that's why they don't like embassies moving there. And that's why most embassies of the world are not in there. They're in Tel Aviv.
David, how on earth did this become such a big topic of conversation in Australian politics?
Well, it all really came about because of the Wentworth by-election and the fact that that is a community where there is a relatively high proportion of Jewish constituents. The Liberal who was running for Wentworth, Dave Sharma, had actually raised the idea of recognising Jerusalem more formally as the capital of Israel and having a plan to move the Australian embassy from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem. Now, this was something where he was on the record with this position, raising it, and he's a former Australian ambassador to Israel. So he said this could help the two-state solution in the Middle East. Now, that was something that I think influenced Scott Morrison, although we've since heard that there was no pressure from Dave Sharma on Scott Morrison to take this decision. However, it's something that Scott Morrison looked at and decided that he would air. Now, he didn't announce a formal policy. He announced a shift in position where he would consider the moving of the Australian embassy. That in itself was a big shift, made big headlines, and it was briefed to the media, including to the Sydney Morning Herald. In fact, before some of the Australian government's own authorities knew about it, it's since emerged that there wasn't a lengthy consultation with people like Foreign Minister Maurice Payne, with DFAT. And in fact, we heard that the acting chief of the Defence Force at the time only found out about this through the media. So there were questions about the process from the start, and there were questions about the timing because of the way in which it was announced right in that final week of the Wentworth by-election.
And did it work?
No, it didn't work. Obviously, they didn't keep the seat in the by-election. Kerrin Phelps won, and there was a lot of debate about whether this had helped at all. There were many voters who had already voted by the time that this announcement was out. And that's, you know, for various reasons, including religious holidays, but it's also a truism about election campaigns now. A lot more people cast pre-poll votes and they go in early and they get their vote out of the way. So whatever you announce in the last week may not be effective enough because of that large proportion of people who've already cast their ballots.
So, Nick, you were actually in Israel when this decision to consider it as an option was made. What was the coverage like there at the time?
The coverage was really significant. To a lot of Israelis, it's a very important step. Obviously, the United States did it recently because in moving the embassy, you're recognising Jerusalem as the capital of Israel, which is what most Israelis want to see happen. What did surprise me, what was very noticeable, though, in the coverage was how sophisticated it was. It wasn't that Israeli media was just saying Australia is considering this. It was going right into the politics of the Wentworth by-election. It was very clear to the journalists covering it that this was a political decision. And it did colour, to some extent, I think, the coverage. The other thing to note is that Dave Sharma, who is Australia's former ambassador to Israel, is really quite a well-known and revered member of the diplomatic, or was when he was there, of the diplomatic corps. So there was a lot of knowledge about Dave himself and a lot of affection for him.
Were people shocked?
I think they were surprised. I think they were happily surprised. I spoke to politicians from across the political spectrum about it. And even, you know, while this is a bigger issue perhaps for more conservative Israelis, supporters of Likud in particular, even moderate sort of peace advocates still supported it. So they were shocked, but they were happy about it. They also did note something that didn't get a lot of coverage or play in Australia. If you read the wording closely, firstly, it said that Australia would consider doing this, not that Australia would, but even more particularly, it said it would consider moving the embassy to West Jerusalem, not to Jerusalem. West Jerusalem is controlled by Israel. East Jerusalem is largely Arab, though controlled by Israel as well. And when Russia first announced some time ago that it would recognise West Jerusalem, that disgruntled some Israelis. They want to see Israel. Their goal is to see Jerusalem as a unified capital of the state of Israel. So West Jerusalem wouldn't, the recognition of West Jerusalem would have stood out to some people and wouldn't have pleased them.
Mm. David, it's extraordinary, isn't it, that Scott Morrison, so soon into his prime ministership, with an election to fight next year on really big issues around, you know, the economy, climate change, cost of living, cost of energy. This issue has really sucked up a lot of the oxygen around him, both inside his own party and in the electorate. It just won't go away. Has he placed any timing on when this decision is going to be made?
Yes, he has. He set a time frame of getting this decided by the end of the year. And I think really that point can't come soon enough now for Scott Morrison and for the government, because it's become worse become more difficult at every stage. I mean, it was announced during a by-election, so the timing was not ideal. It became a domestic political issue very, very swiftly. But it also was announced ahead of all these regional summits, and we've seen that Scott Morrison's gone to the East Asia Summit in Singapore and then to the APEC Summit in Port Moresby. And this clouded some of his discussions with Joko Widodo of Indonesia, with Mahathir Mohamad of Malaysia, and that wasn't really ideal. It became actually harder for Scott Morrison to have any nuance or room to move with this policy, as those meetings were held, we had Mahathir, who linked it to terror, because, of course, he's a strong opponent of Israel.
You see, I pointed out that in dealing with terrorism, one has to know the causes. Adding to the cause for terrorism is not going to be helpful. I pointed that out.
And sees that the recognition of Jerusalem as the capital is only going to fuel terrorism. Now, that's his view, but it was always going to hang over a bilateral meeting. Similar with Joko Widodo, it becomes a domestic policy issue in Indonesia because we had Widodo's ministers warning about a go-slow on the Australian trade deal with Indonesia. Now, this is not a huge trade deal when you compare to the big ones that we've done with Japan and with China and South Korea. However, it is the next step in the government's agenda on trade. And because of the government's own decisions, there was now a cloud over that. And now we've got also the Indonesian opposition parties also expressing a view on this policy. So it, in the weeks since the announcement of the consideration of the embassy move, it's just got worse and needlessly worse in many ways. It's something that Scott Morrison really didn't need, because he wants to be talking about domestic issues in Australia. He wants to be talking about the economy. He did his bus tour in Queensland to get back in touch, to get encourage Australians to see a different side of himself so they get a sense of who the Prime Minister is. Meanwhile, this has just been getting in the way.
And David, where is the pressure coming from within his own party? I mean, there's some pretty outspoken views on this being expressed this week by pretty senior people.
Definitely from the Conservative side. It has highlighted the different views on the question of Israel within the Liberal Party. As in any part of Australian politics, there are different views, and there is a group on the Conservative side who are strongly in favour of recognising or moving the embassy to Jerusalem as a sign of support for Israel, and that's something where there's been instantly calls for Scott Morrison to go ahead with this policy that he's considering. I think it's been quite difficult for others within the party to warn against it, because that looks like they're really taking on their own prime minister. But we've seen comments that have emphasised, say, you've got to look at all the factors here. Now that we've got Indonesia and Malaysia expressing views, you've got to take into account regional factors too. And that was actually a point that Trade Minister Simon Birmingham was making on Sunday, that there are these wider factors to be taken into account. Now, that's key to the process that we've got now underway. It's not clear exactly how the process works other than an internal government deliberation, but it's going to be concluded at the end of the year. And there's an argument for taking into account things like regional friendships and regional trade.
We're going to take a quick break and come back to you later on, David and Nick, to talk about the bigger implications for our region and what's likely to happen before the end of the year. We are diving headfirst into hotly contested topics today, and both sides have very strongly held views. Often these debates are not very constructive. So I did two interviews separately, so you can listen to what they have to say without combat getting in the way. You'll hear first from Vic Aladef, the CEO of the New South Wales Jewish Board of Deputies, then Sarah Saleh, a Palestinian-Australian human rights advocate and writer. Vic, thanks so much for joining me on Please Explain. Let's jump straight in. What is the argument for moving the embassies to Jerusalem?
Tori, there are two very fundamental arguments. We can call it ancient history and current modern history. In terms of ancient history, there is an unbroken 3,000-year Jewish connection to Jerusalem, to Israel, and specifically to Jerusalem. And this is proven in literally hundreds of biblical references. It is proven in archaeological links, which absolutely prove and validate the Jewish connection to Jerusalem. But more modern history, current history, since the modern state of Israel was established by vote of the UN 70 years ago, Jerusalem has been Israel's capital. It is where the seat of government is located. It is where the Knesset, the parliament, is located, the Supreme Court, president's residence, prime minister's office, most government ministries, all located in Jerusalem. So in terms of ancient history, unbroken 3,000-year Jewish connection to Jerusalem, current history and modern history, it is, or, and always has been, Israel's capital since Israel was established by the UN 70 years ago.
So, Vic, why are the embassies, apart from the American one now, in Tel Aviv?
And that is a very good question. And it comes down to real politics. It comes down to the United Nations. Within the UN, there's a body called the Organization of Islamic Conference, the OIC, which comprises 57 plus one Islamic states, plus one being future state of Palestine. They don't all vote on bloc on issues, but you've got there an inbuilt huge weight against the one Jewish state, which is the state of Israel. So it's not as if there are independent objective analyses saying where should the state be or where shouldn't it be. You've got huge biases within the UN. The other point here is a very fundamental point, is every country, every nation has the right to determine where its capital should be. Imagine if other countries said Australia's capital should be in Darwin or whatever it is. We have the right to determine our capital, as does Israel's its capital. So in terms of why all these countries, it comes down to the United Nations and interests and realpolitik and all these other influences coming to bear.
But why now, Vic? I mean, why is it, in your view, important now for Australia to make a statement like this?
So I make no comment on what Australia should or should not do. The issue is whether or not Jerusalem should or should not be Israel's capital. And in fact, Jerusalem is and always has been Israel's capital. And the question is whether countries will recognize an existing reality. And that is that Jerusalem is or is Israel's capital. Why is it an issue now? It's obviously clear that the President of the United States is the person who put this onto the global agenda 2 years ago, or however long ago it was. And a couple of countries have followed his example and have followed suit. So, and that has obviously elevated the issue and put it onto the global agenda. So I'm not buying into what Australia should or should not do. What I'm focusing on is that Jerusalem is and always has been Israel's capital. That is the reality. And so, therefore, countries should recognize a country's capital. It's not for any country to determine what another country's capital should be. And that is what is taking place from many countries around the world, the majority, in fact.
Vic, many people argue that making a move like this would somehow aid or facilitate the conclusion of a two-state solution. Why is that the case?
A very important point is that recognizing Jerusalem as Israel's capital does not preclude East Jerusalem being a capital of a future state of Palestine. And in fact, many would argue it would accelerate it, because it would recognize that East Jerusalem is and could be the capital of the future state of Palestine. Everyone wants, or I would say most well-meaning people would want, a two-state solution. Israel and Palestine living in peace side by side. And for that to happen, and this has been part of the multiple offers put on the table by Barak and Olmert and former Israeli prime ministers, is that Jerusalem would be internationalized, and or East Jerusalem would be the capital of the future state of Palestine. So having such recognition, there's a very strong argument to say it would actually accelerate movement towards having a future state of Palestine in peace, living alongside Israel, and a two-state solution, which has obviously become so remote as to be beyond, we don't see it happening very soon. So such recognition, if it went together with recognition of East Jerusalem, future state of Palestine, could in fact accelerate a two-state solution.
Vic, thanks so much for giving me your time.
You're very welcome, Tori. Thank you.
And now you'll hear from Palestinian Australian activist Sara Saleh. Sara, thanks so much for joining. Please explain. What is the argument for not moving embassies from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem?
Thank you for having me. Looking at any sort of good analysis of this move, I think would show you that the answer is an overwhelming no. We should not be moving our embassy, the Australian embassy, to Jerusalem. We've heard from a number of individuals and experts across the political spectrum that have said to us that this is not economically viable. We saw former Foreign Minister Julie Bishop, as the news came out, had actually commissioned DFAT to, provide a report on the situation. And they said that it was, the cost was incredibly high, a whopping $200 million that could be better spent, on our strategic interests. We've seen former ambassadors to Israel, such as Peter Rogers, such as Ross Burns, speak out against the move as well. I do feel like, they've got a lot to say, and they make a very strong case for it not being in our national political security interests. And whilst I will say that Indonesia should be no more of a driver of our foreign policy and national interest than, say, Israel, what I will say is the fact of the matter is that such a move would isolate us in the region. It would affect relationships in the region, in ASEAN, trade as well, as we know already and as we've heard from ministers speaking out against
it. But what do you say to people who argue that Israel considers its capital to be Jerusalem, and who is anyone to tell them that that is not the case and embassies should be in capitals?
Sure. I think ultimately what we need to do is take a step back and look at the history of how we got here. And so with East Jerusalem, we know that it is a final status issue. What that means very plainly is that it is on the negotiating table to be discussed by two parties, in hopes for a peaceful and lasting long-term solution. So I think Australia really needs to think about its role here and the setting of example globally. We've had 190 countries plus across the world who've decided not to move their embassies to Jerusalem out of respect for this process, in terms of this solution, this final status. I think that if Australia wanted to take up the opportunity to show good leadership, on a global stage to play out its role and to make sure that it's keeping its reputation, this would be something that we would actually be encouraging. The respect of international law, the respect of UN resolutions, countless UN resolutions that have said and have talked about Jerusalem as a final status.
And what about the argument that shifting the embassies could accelerate progress towards a two-state solution?
Look, ultimately, I don't think that one state or two state are the key issues right now, because we can safely say that Israel has definitely, killed the two-state solution in terms of how it's conducted itself over the last several decades. What we've seen is nonstop military expansionism, illegal settlements, annexation of East Jerusalem. They are not willing to share, despite what, as I said, international community and international law and human rights has relegated in terms of Jerusalem. So for me, if we're talking about it being two states, there's no way that's going to happen given the reality of the situation and with the ongoing settlements that Israel has continued to establish. So we know further to that one needn't look any further than the nation state law that was recently introduced in Israel that basically gives a quasi-constitutional status to Israel being a Jewish-only homeland at the expense of Palestinian ancestral land and at the expense of Palestinian bodies. So ultimately, what does that say except that the process is being stalled and that there isn't really a hope for a two-state solution because Israel has made sure of that?
Is this a first-order issue for Muslims in Australia? I mean, you say that it was done partially to win Jewish votes. Has it sacrificed Muslim votes, do you think?
It's really important to put this in perspective, I think, because we talk about the Israel-Palestine, or the occupation of Palestine as though it is this mythical, romantic conflict, even though it's definitely not a conflict of two sides, as though it's this issue that is far from far removed from reality. We're never going to resolve it. But if we actually just added a little bit of perspective into what it really is, it's not unique. It's not mythical. It is simply an indigenous population that is struggling for their right to self-determination. We know that Palestinians want a homeland, and we know that Israelis want a Jewish-only homeland at the expense of these Palestinian aspirations and self-determination, and therein lies the crux of the problem, I think. So if we're to talk about it in those types of terms, then it seems a lot more realistic, because we are seeing Indigenous populations across the world, struggle for self-determination. What Australia can do, to really take stock of its Muslim population and Palestinian, which basically means Muslim, Christian, atheist, whatever, Palestinian population, what they can do is try and unstall the so-called peace process by actually adopting formal recognition of Palestine. Doing that would not only put Palestinians Palestine on an equal sort of playing field, where this is, there are two parties, as I was talking about, referring to Jerusalem, two parties talking about this possibility of a future and lasting just peace. It would actually inspire, like, it would give people hope. It would be symbolic, and it would say to them that you are human, you get to dream, you get to have the possibility of living in this with dignity, with safety, with equality, alongside Jews and all sorts of people in that area.
Sarah, thanks so much for your time.
Thank you so much for having me.
Hi, I'm Jess Irvine. Thanks for listening to Please Explain. The Sydney Morning Herald and Age newsrooms are home to the country's most experienced economics editors and reporters, delivering trusted news and analysis. But we can't do it without you. Our subscribers get unlimited access to our award-winning independent journalism, plus exclusive behind-the-scenes stories you can't get anywhere else. Subscribe today and support news you can trust.
David, Nick, back to you both. Nick, when you were in Israel, you actually saw the new American embassy in Jerusalem.
Well, what they've done is they've changed the sign on the consulate in Jerusalem and ripped that sign off and stuck up the word embassy. So right. It practically hasn't changed a great deal. Its significance is more symbolic.
And what was the reaction to that?
Well, the reaction from conservatives was huge, hugely supportive. Right back in the 1990s, Congress, at the urging of the Israel lobby in the very powerful Israel lobby in America, passed an act called the Jerusalem Embassy Act, saying that they would move the embassy. And since then, every Republican presidential candidate has promised during the campaign that they would move the embassy, and then they all quietly forget about it as soon as they take office, because their foreign affairs officials tell them how potentially disruptive and damaging it could be. Trump went ahead and did it at the urging of an American donor called Sheldon Adelson. And so this move goes back to there. This is what focused, I think, global attention, or at least the attention of Western governments, conservative Western governments, on this issue and the potential of moving the embassy to make a statement of support for Israel.
David, how much of an influence did the US move have on Scott Morrison's thinking on this?
Scott Morrison never said that this move was about America, about Donald Trump. Obviously, it's known that Donald Trump's got a strong position on Jerusalem as the capital of Israel. But that was never said as a reason for the Australian decision. The argument for this Australian decision by Scott Morrison was that the old arrangement hadn't worked. It hadn't succeeded in getting any progress towards a two-state solution, so it was reasonable to consider other options. That doesn't mean that it's not a factor in Australia's relationship with the US, because we know Scott Morrison is hoping to meet Donald Trump at the G20 meeting in Buenos Aires in Argentina in about 10 days' time. It could come up in that meeting. Perhaps it would be seen positively by Donald Trump. But equally, there's not really much evidence that it's been welcomed by Donald Trump. There's been no statement from the US about it, from Donald Trump himself.
We're still waiting for Indonesia to sign off on a $16.5 billion trade deal, aren't we? Is there chances that that will happen before this was resolved?
I think all the signs are that the Indonesians will hold up that trade agreement until this is decided. They'd obviously like a decision from Australia against the embassy move, a reversion to previous policy. If that's not the outcome by the end of the year, then I think there would be doubts over that trade agreement. And we're also seeing from the Indonesian opposition, when we went to them with some questions over the last week or so, they're starting to look at the Australian trade agreement and starting to raise concerns. So what happens with this, there's been a bit of a snowballing effect happening here, because the mere fact that there's been some dispute about this issue means the opposition in Indonesia is now looking again at the trade agreement, raising objections, and we've got a presidential election in Indonesia in April, and there's the potential for things to drag on until then. Now, we've got a difference of opinion in Australian politics to be decided by the federal election here by May. At the same time, we've got disputes in Indonesia over these issues ahead of their April presidential election. There is this worrying scenario where the trade agreement stretches out into next year.
It seems extraordinary that Australians all of a sudden are expected to have an opinion on this topic politically.
Well, I don't know how strongly people feel about this. I looked at one poll from a couple of years ago, or maybe from 12 months ago, where they found, I think, 70% opposition and 30% support. And I thought, well, is that a legitimate poll? Because how many of those questioners really didn't have an opinion until the question was put to them? It's not something that is front of mind for most Australians.
David, what's your sense of this as a front of mind issue for Australian voters? Would it be best for Scott Morrison to get this topic out of the way as soon as possible?
Yes, I think it's something where the sooner that they can put this to rest, the better. I think that they've struggled over the weeks whenever the question is raised, where's the Australian interest in this? Ministers have responded to that question by talking about how they think, well, this can't hurt the two-state solution. We should try something different. It's worth pursuing or worth considering. We've heard all those answers. It's been actually quite difficult for them to answer what is the Australian interest here. So making it matter to Australian voters has been really difficult for the government. And when you look at the timing, it's the worst possible timing ahead of a federal election here where it plays into domestic politics at a time where Morrison's got to focus on domestic issues. I just don't think it's something that matters at all to the majority of voters.
David, Nick, thanks so much for joining. Please Explain Again.
Thanks.
Thanks, Tori.
Thanks to our guests this episode, David Crowe, Nick O'Malley, Vic Aladef and Sarah Saleh. If you know someone who should be listening to Please Explain, let them know about us. If they're not a podcast listener yet, do what I did with my mum. Grab their phone and get them subscribed for weekly episodes. Please Explain is brought to you by the newsrooms of The Age and the Sydney Morning Herald. Subscribing to our news service gets you unlimited access to award-winning, independent journalism and great behind-the-scenes content you can't get anywhere else. Follow the link in our show bio to get a subscription today. This episode was produced and edited by Rachel Dexter, technical assistance from David McMillan, and Tom McKendrick is our head of audio. Special thanks to Amelia Maguire for her assistance. I'm Tori Maguire. Thanks for listening.